Welcome to this week's edition of the Don Cherry Grapevine podcast. And Dad, a lot of stuff happening in the National Hockey League, but here in Toronto, the big news is Auston Matthews was diagnosed with COVID-19 while he was in Arizona.
Yes, it seems like if you listen to the media, everybody in Arizona has that plague. I call it the plague. You know, somehow or other, I don't like the idea of Auston Matthews. They know that he had it. Now, Tampa, if you look at Tampa, there's three guys at Tampa had it, and nobody knows who they are. Probably they do, but they. I just don't think it's a good idea. And the rest of the league, surely out of the rest of the league, somebody has that plague. And I call it, what do you call it, a virus. And it hasn't been released yet.
Same with the NFL. The NFL has had ones, and they don't release the players' names.
Yeah, I just don't think, and you know, everybody's going to remember, like when he plays, if he has a bad game, oh, well, let's come back and everything. I just don't think it's right. But anyhow, he's got it, and he's the only guy, I think, in the National Hockey League that they know that has it.
Yeah. Well, the other couple things that are happening, it looks like in, again, reading in the paper and on the internet, so you take it with a grain of salt, that the Canadian government would allow teams to come up and play.
Yeah.
So, you know,
they got to be quarantined or something, don't they?
Well, they think they said that if the teams are going to come up, they might waive that or work with them on that. So it still looks like Toronto. They're talking Vancouver and Edmonton for the hub cities.
Yeah.
And I think
Edmonton would be nice with that new arena.
Yeah. And then they said, you know, Alberta doesn't have a lot of COVID-19. Like Toronto has, you know, they're still kind of battling. Vancouver's kind of little. And so they're still talking about that. And then they've set a July 30th date to get it going. So it'll be interesting to see if they can do it. But boy, some fans are just vehemently against having the...
Nah, it's always fans against everything. And we've seen that all over. If they didn't do it, they should have done it. And, you know, against it. But, you know, we're going to see. I'll tell you one thing. You have to admire them. They're battling right to the end. But I know Matthews getting, and not to bring Matthews out in it again, him being one of the stars really hurt their chances of keep going.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then the other thing that happened, Dad, was the whole Buffalo situation.
22 guys.
And again, you did a tweet 3 weeks ago about Buffalo.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't now. And you know, I could go on. They're not bad. They're not bad at home. I think they're pretty good at home, Buffalo. But they can't win on the road, which is a bad sign.
Which is opposite Montreal, what you were saying.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
What does that mean?
But it shows you lots of character on Montreal that they went on the road. I like the idea of this guy, Petro. What's his name? How do you pronounce his name? The guy from Rochester, the owner, Petkula. He just didn't like the idea. He didn't like anybody. But the guy in Rochester, Chris Taylor, he's the guy. He was second in his division and fifth in the whole. He's, wait a minute, I'm winning and I'm doing good. I'm doing good and I get gassed too. But I guess he didn't like the whole, their whole, I mean, all the scouts and everybody, 22
well,
guys.
I think it's a funny thing is too, it's timing wise, like the draft's coming up and, you know, Kevin Adams, I really hope he does well. You know,
yeah.
I always wish everybody and I'd like to see Buffalo do well because I think when Buffalo's strong, it's a good rivalry with Toronto.
Yeah.
But, you know, how is he going into the draft?
Oh, you got to have some help. We put out Mike Fuda.
Yeah.
And we hope Mike Fuda would, and I don't know whether I helped him or not, but I did want to do Mike Fuda because he's a good friend of mine. But anyhow, Buffalo, it's a strange. I've never heard ever. Shanahan, somebody said Shanahan, you know, he gassed 20 guys. What did he gass? 20
yeah, I think it was 20 guys he got.
20 guys. But he did it. He got there a year, and he seen. But when I started to think about it, this Kevin Adams has been there for a year, and you know he's done. He's been through the whole deal and everything like that. So we'll see. I mean, that is 22 guys. I've never heard of that before.
Well, a lot of people on Twitter and on the Rock'em Sock'em Facebook page, they want to ask you: does this remind you of the Leafs with Ballard, with the owner being too hands-on?
No, because that was successful. That was a great team. I mean, you go look at their team
in the mid-70s. Yeah,
I mean, they were pretty good. They did good in the playoffs. They had a good goaltender, Paul Mathieu. They had a good defense. They had good forwards. They had everything going for them. They had a good coach in Roger Nielsen. They had everything going. And Harold, he was a good friend of mine. He let everybody go to the WHL. WHA. I always get that. I try not to. WHA. Not to get off on another subject. I remember we were in here to play Saturday night, and they played, I think, the Toros. I think they were called the Toros.
Toronto Toros, yeah.
Yeah. And Harry said, "Do you want to go to the game?" And I said, "Okay, we'll go." And I remember at the end of the second period, I said, "I have to get out of here." And he said, Harrison and the general manager said, "Well, how come?" I said, "Because I'm accepting them not taking the body." I started to think this is the way hockey, and it was the most dullest game you'd ever see in your life, the WHA.
So mm-hmm. They played in the gardens.
Yeah.
So there was, you could choose between going to see the Leafs and going to see the Toros. Now, was the ticket prices cheaper?
They're dirt cheap.
Dirt cheap. So all the people that couldn't afford to go to the Leaf game but want to experience the gardens could go to see the WHA.
I wonder if Harold had anything to do with
that. No, it had nothing to do with them.
No,
I don't think so. But yeah. I know one thing that...
Well, you always said back in the 70s that, basically what happened was Toronto would run into Montreal like we would run into. So yeah, there was no way they were beating them.
And I think the Islanders, they put the Islanders out one time. Danny McDonald got it with a broken...
Josh scored, yeah.
Yeah,
in overtime.
And he scored. And they had a good club. So there was no... Harold Ballard let the people go to the WHA. He did not sign. Keon, he let all those guys... Keon was still playing and the whole deal. And no, there was no comparison between Harold Ballard.
So would you say he did those changes? He really did want to win, or it was a personal thing that if he didn't like a player, he didn't care?
I think what happened was, I think he went a little funny. And I hate to say it, that's my personal opinion. Nobody could ruin that club like that. That was a good club. They had everything going for him.
Well, kind of getting off on a tangent, when you were in Colorado when everything was kind of going down, and you and the GM in Colorado, you called to seeing if Sittler was available, and then they said no, but Lanny was.
Sittler had a big fight. They brought in Punch Imlach, who I don't know what he was trying to do. And we heard that Sittler but we didn't know, and nobody knew that he had a no-trade contract. And he ripped off his C, and it was awful here. It was going on, and they said, no, Lanny McDonald. Lanny McDonald? You can have Lanny McDonald. No, I don't know.
Can I ask, what was Sittler upset about?
He didn't matter. He was getting, but they did not want Lanny or Daryl Sittler to play in a what do they call it, power play?
Showdown.
Harold probably
Yeah,
didn't.
Because Borgi Salming had broke a finger in the year before blocking a shot. He should have blocked a shot.
For people that don't remember what Showdown was, Ralph Malambi, between periods, they would get, it was like a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-3.
3-on-3.
Tournament. And it was super people were more interested in watching it. So they would have like the Leafs against, the Bruins, and they would have 3-on-3.
So
in between periods
TV, okay.
of Saturday night. So
and was it popular?
And so it was like this week it's, the Leafs or whoever teams Sittler.
No, you have Sittler, McDonald and Salming.
That'd
not
be worth
too
watching.
Shabby.
That'd be worth watching.
Yeah, and
so someone got hurt, and Harold said, "Wait a minute, I'm not going to risk my stars to do this showdown."
Well, he was right in a way.
He was, and you could see his point. He had a lot riding on these players.
And what happened was, Sittler said, "Well, we're playing. Everybody else is playing." And he said, "Well, you're not playing." And there was a big fight going on, and he ripped
the
C off.
So Sittler having a no trade contract could be a little cocky like that.
Well,
right?
No, he was hurt, and. I remember Brian McFarland, who was, I must talk about him. He was on Hockey Night in Canada. And he said, well, Sittler was right, which he was right. He was banished to Montreal. He had to fly down there to Montreal all the time.
Because Ballard said, no more of you coming into the gardens. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Brian. McFarland.
He dictated.
Yeah, he said no more.
Because back then, the studios were in... right across.
So Harold could dictate to Hockey Night in Canada.
Well, I was being fired one time, one of my many times being fired by Hockey Night in Canada. And I found out that he said, and I think not because he liked me, is because he disliked, he said, you fire him, you're not coming to the gardens anymore. So that's how one way I got out of it. What were we talking about?
Well,
what
happened was that to spite Daryl Sittler, they would trade.
They traded Lanny.
Lanny McDonald.
His buddy.
Yeah, and I don't know whether I told the story that Lanny was going to report. He said, I'm not reporting. And Adele, his wife, was having a baby. What, beautiful. She was beautiful, but she was, I'm not, I don't need this. So I phoned him. And I said, come on, you got to come. I mean, we lost. We would have lost Paymont. And Paymont didn't want to go to Toronto because he's French-Canadian. He says, they'll love you there. And which they did. And he was the highest scoring right winger.
He still holds the record.
I think Vibe broke it. Rick Vibe. Anyhow. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, we had Lanny McDonald. And I phoned him. And I said, look, you come. You just play the games. You don't have to practice. And he was terrific. He scored in 45 games or something. He scored 25 goals, which is unbelievable. And Rene Robert played for us. We had a good club. If you didn't have goalie, we had Hardy.
But Ray Muron was mad that you.
He didn't want to, you know.
He kind of badmouthed you to the owner, saying,
"Well, it was
terrible that he not letting Lanny practice."
Yeah.
Oh, I see that he thought Dad was being soft on Lanny.
Yeah, well, but he got 25 goals.
Yeah, because he didn't know.
I said we should have had nobody practice, but anyhow, he was terrific. Lanny McDonald was terrific, and we got him. And no, Harold, I don't know why.
I think that was after, and then after that, that's when
they really
Sittler ripped off a C.
Yeah, and the whole deal, and Brian. It was a bad deal, but they had a good club, so it wasn't the same as Harold.
You don't think it's the same as Buffalo?
No, not at all.
And one thing with Buffalo too, you and I were talking about a little while ago. They're a big blue collar town, and they love Rob Ray and Barnaby and all those tough guys. And they had like 3 fights last year. They had less than 20 hits a game.
And if you got hurt, if you went into Buffalo. And you played, or you played them at any time. If you got hurt, it was by accident. Nobody hit anybody. Nobody did anything. And Eichel,
so they practiced social distancing, Buffalo.
Yeah, before it even. But Jack Eichel, he's a superstar. He really is a superstar. And they better do something. I know.
I think I read somewhere he's got 4 years left or 5 years left on his contract.
And they won't trade him. But you got to watch. Here's what happened. Yeah, I used to remember when I was with the Boston Bruins. The teams that lose, after a while, you get used to losing, and you accept losing. You know, you play hard, but you accept losing.
You said that's new with horses.
Well, yes, that's true.
Tell us about Timothy. That was a great story.
Well, I mean, they do get used to losing, just like athletes. I remember there was a horse, Rockingham Raceways, and
Timothy. That was his name.
It was called Timothy's Chance, and they were holding him back, and he came in third one race, and then the second race he came in second. They were holding him back because they were getting the odds up, and sure enough, they were going to let him, as they say, take his lead and let him go.
You were saying about the.
And so what happened was, I remember. Okay, we knew that he was going to win, so. All the Bruins and all you guys were going to be big money because, of course, the odds were up that he was not going to win.
Isn't that awful?
Hey, I knew.
But you knew.
Well, I knew what was going on because I was the lowly hot walker those days. So I said because I worked for Jerry's Barn, and I said to the groom, I said, "Hey, tonight's Timothy's big chance." He says he's going to win tonight. He goes, "No, he's not." I go, "What do you mean he's not?" He goes, "He's too used to losing, Cindy." He goes, he won't take the lead. He's not used to having other horses. He's not used to leading and being in front of other horses. I says, "Get out of here." So I remember I came home. You and Mom were getting all dressed up during the afternoon. I said, "Where are you guys going?" "Well, we're going to go see Jerry's horse run. This is his biggest chance. He's going to win." I go, "No, he's not going to win." And Mom goes, what do you mean he's not going to win? We're putting big money on that horse. And the story goes, and Mom says, well, we're not betting. And you got mad and said, we're betting, because if I don't bet big, Jerry will know I know something, something's up.
Yeah.
So I remember you telling me, and this was an important lesson in life, many that you taught me, was that he goes, do you like Jerry's trainer? I won't say his name. And I go, yeah, he's really a good guy.
Well, he wasn't a trainer. Didn't you say he was?
No, he was the trainer. Oh, yeah. And he was the one that was training the horse. And he says, do you like him? And I says, yeah. He goes, well, then you keep your mouth shut, he says, about that horse. He goes, because if Jerry finds out that he trained that horse wrong, he'll fire the trainer.
Oh, yeah. And
because you guys lost a lot of money.
Well, you talked to the guy that was like a...
He was the groom.
Oh, the groom,
grooms
yeah.
know more yeah. about the horses intimately than the trainers do. The trainers just, they talk to the owners and they do whatever the
he
owners
knew what
want.
Was going on.
But the grooms know what's going on if yeah. you want to know. That's why a lot of the hot walkers and all that make the money, because if you know the back track, yeah. that's where the real info is.
He was smart.
So, yeah. And so what happened in the race?
He lost.
Yeah, same, because he wouldn't.
He wouldn't go in front of the other horses. He was too used to losing.
I don't know how we got Buffalo.
Well, you were mentioning that, you know, hockey players they accept losing, and when they win, it's an exception to the rule, and not the rule of thumb is to win the game.
Funny when you talk like that. It reminds me of when I played. You play for goalies, so many goalies and everything, and I remember. And Hardy Askren was like that. He'd break your heart. He'd break your heart. And what happened is, he let in three goals, and you'd work your tail off to get to back to, you know, to tie up the game, and then he let in another easy goal, and then he played good. And you know, at the end of the game, you say, well, you can't blame him. He played good. But he was, I remember before he went to the, he was a great coach too, by the way. I see sort of knock him, but he was a great coach. I remember we had a goaltender, and I'm not mentioning his name, that he was like that. He let in two easy goals, and you'd tie it up, and then he'd let in another easy goal, and then you'd work, and then he'd really play good, you know, you're behind, and then you'd tie it up again, and then he played, and he was like, you had goaltenders who would really play good when they were behind, but put them ahead. And Jerry Cheevers for the Boston Bruins, the exact opposite. You get up 5-1, you know you are going to be in a barn burner because he'd fall asleep. And make it
but
five.
But you'd rather have that type of goalie that would fall asleep if you have a big lead. So you're saying that Jerry didn't get too many shutouts because he'd fall asleep.
No, he didn't care about
that. Didn't care about shutouts. No. He didn't care about his average.
And he was a winner.
So if it was 4-5-1, you knew it's going to be 5-3 or 5-4.
I remember during the game, you're right. We were in a 5-1, and he used to showboat a little bit. And they made some rules for him. We'll go over that someday. But he caught the goal. Hey, I remember the shot. I remember. And you know how he let it go on the air, and the guy went by him and tapped it, like knocked it out of his net and for the goal, make it 5-2.
Oh, so when the goalies put up their, they have the puck in their glove, but yet they make it, they embellish. Is that the word?
He was having fun.
Embellish?
Yeah, it was embellish is right. And the guy was going by just topped in the top corner. He didn't care. Anyhow, I know we're not going to talk about Buffalo anymore.
I hope they do. I hope Kevin Adams does well, they get going, because I think.
I like somehow or other. See, it seems that it was a tweet that I would massacred Buffalo. It wasn't that I don't know why we're talking about Buffalo so much. I guess it's close here, but.
They got to get a bit tougher.
They got to get tougher, and they got to get bigger, and they got to be a little meaner. You got to go. When you go in to Buffalo, you should be a little afraid.
But I've got a question. Like, when you say tougher, how the way they call the penalties, how can a team be tougher when, you know, they call it so tight?
You have to kill the penalties good.
Penalty kill.
Berube, what did Berube say?
Yeah, right. It's just don't care about the penalties. We'll kill it off. Well, you know, you look at St. Louis is tough. You look at Boston's tough. You look at Washington's tough.
Las Vegas is
Vegas
tough.
Vegas is tough. You know, you're going in there. You know, you're going to get hurt
because you have a good penalty. Because you use the same guys for your penalty killers every time.
Yeah,
do they still do that nowadays in the NHL?
Yeah,
they sort of rotate, don't they? Or
no. They use the stars now. I would never use the stars.
That's what you were saying before. You would never have a star kill a penalty.
Well, they don't block shots anymore. and block it there. But anyhow, let's get off Buffalo.
Okay.
We hope them good. We hope they do well. They got a tough go. When the owner comes in and they said 22 guys, that's what I call a massacre. I just feel sorry for the guy in Rochester. Wait a minute. Chris Taylor. Wait a minute. I'm doing pretty good. I get let go too. I guess he just, the guy in Petulia, whatever his name is, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Anyhow, from Rochester, he's the owner. He wants the team tough. I assume that's the only thing I can think of, because when you get rid of 22 guys, boy, that's what they call a massacre.
Okay, we're going to start to ask you some questions from the fans out there. And this is relative to me, since I at one time was a hockey mom and saw a lot of what goes on behind the scenes with families. So
you should tell us stories about all
that. Oh, we could do a whole show if I could tell you some stories about
it. Oh, why don't you?
Well, yeah, no problem there. I could, anyway, Dave from Saskatoon asks, Don, have you ever seen a parent or parents, moms included, ruin a kid's chance to go to the CHL? And my son, because his son is starting to play competitive hockey, should I coach him even? So they got a couple good questions there. Should you coach your own son? What you shouldn't do?
Well, I'll tell you, I remember Tim and I used to go, well, we still go, and the North Centennial. Is that what they call it?
North York Centennial or Herb Carnegie.
We used to go there all the time. And I remember I was sitting, I don't do it anymore, and you're a scout, and I used to sit up amongst the scouts. And I remember this number six. I never forgot his number was six. I don't know, he's a pretty good defenseman. He was not bad. And I saw this guy run all the way down and just scream and holler at the coach. And, you know, and I knew it was, and he said, I heard one guy said, who is that guy? He says, that's number six's father. And I saw them take the pencil. Every guy just crossed it out. Because if you ever drafted that guy, if you recommended that guy, you'd get the father too.
Well, isn't that what they called two for one?
Well, I don't know what
two for one.
Two for one, yeah. That's what they call it.
Yeah, and I think that Tim talked to one of them, and he says, if I ever drafted that guy, and that guy came to camp, and he hollered at my coach, at the coach that I, or the general manager, he said, it'd be my job. So here's a kid who was pretty good, number six. I remember.
A defenseman.
He was a defenseman, number six. And he was pretty good, just crossed him off, never had a chance.
And then I remember the coach hardly played him after that.
Well, yeah, because
the father.
The father's
yelling at him.
So what about dads coaching their sons?
No, because I don't mind if the father, but the most of the time, you put a lot of pressure on the kid. The kids, the father, you know, you better, if he doesn't score a goal, Tim?
Yeah, I like, you see it a lot, and I would say a majority of the time, it ends up worse than better.
Yeah, you're better off.
And there's there was one classic example that there was a father who was the coach, and the son was the goalie. The kid was.
Are you talking Dell's team?
No.
And
we're
okay.
And they were older. They were like 15, and every time a goal was scored, the kid would look to the bench.
Yeah, and father would shake his head.
Father would put his head down and shake his head, and you could
every
just,
goal
like you could every goal. It could be a breakaway, and the guy would pull like a Connor McDavid move on
or
the
tip in
and. He just, the kid, it was, and even got to the point when there was a save, he would look at the father. And the father wouldn't give the thumbs up. He would just.
But remember, Tim, when I was coaching, and maybe I should bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up anyhow, is that we had a kid who was about 6'5". He was a giant. Remember? And I ordered all big equipment.
Well, he was a goalie.
He was a goalie. And I ordered all equipment extra big for him. Because Garth Snow at the time, and you could wear stuff, monstrous stuff at the time.
Right. That was the trend at that time was, Garth Snow started it. You had to look like a snow shovel.
Oh, we know that syndrome, don't we? Don't we, Dad?
Oh, yeah.
and you're a big goalie, and you just come
6 foot five. Just come out. Where are you going to shoot?
Just come out, cut down the angle, and then let the defense worry about it. That was the whole trend in the NHL, and it was becoming the trend in the CHL, and we got a big goalie, 6'5".
And we thought, this is it. And he was big, and we're not mentioning his name. And he and I had ordered all equipment, and, you know, I all extra big equipment for him. And even bigger, because I remember we used to kid about Garth Snow. It looked like he had a 2x4 in the back of his thing. I mean, all you do is come out the angle. And he listened to a guy that said, no, I want him smaller equipment. He was a goaltender coach, I think, at the time, not for me. And we want him to learn to be an athlete or athleticism.
Yeah, so his thing was smaller equipment, play far back in your net. And you're going,
what?
The whole trend is big goalies, big equipment come out. And see, the dad and the goalie coach, they knew more than all the NHL guys, right?
Well, of course.
Because, and me.
Yeah, and you and all the guys.
How about how we saw, we went to a game. Where did we go? We went to a
Brampton.
Brampton Arena. And we were waiting, and the guy got, I think he had 8 goals pumped by him.
Yeah, then what happened was there was, you know, he when CHL, I mean, he got a goalie playing way back in his net. It was bing, 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 you know. So eventually we let him go, and he went to play Tier 2, and we went to see a game, and yeah, I think he spoke 8 goals, and somehow it was our fault.
It was my fault. I ruined him.
Well, I can. Tim, you mentioned about a coach pulling a young kid goalie and all this. We can talk about when Dell was in goal and his coach was the father of the other kid that played goalie. And I remember, Dad, you were at the game.
Yeah, I was at the game, and I walked in a minute to go. And
it was not a minute ago. It was
a minute into the game. What am I thinking about?
And you go, and you think you're going to see Dell, and first shot on net, not Dell's fault, he gets pulled. So we walk in with 1 minute.
Tip in.
Whatever. No, we didn't see it. And Dad says, I thought Dell was starting in goal. Well, of course, first shot, they pulled Dell,
and
he puts his son in.
So I said to his father, Roger, I said, but Dell was playing tonight. He says, no, he pulled him. How could he pull him? He's a minute into the game. I said,
first
I have
shot.
To leave. I said, because
you know, and you know what? In those days, when you walked into the arena, because we were about 30 seconds late, the game had started. I swear I could hear a gasp. Oh, something's up. And everyone looked at you, and everyone's looking. And then Roger did come down, and he describes, now everyone's waiting to see what you're going to do. Are you going to go over? Because you really did want to go over to the bench and all that.
I said, I have to get out of here.
So you left. And then
I have to. I'd be up in charges for
so
murder.
It is very painful when, especially when coaches coach their own kid and the kid's the goalies. It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is. I remember, this is one of my favorite stories, is remember Paul Coffey was coaching the Toronto Marlies.
Oh, and he's a good coach.
And
he could coach the NHL easy.
Like they changed just like pros. You never saw them change.
No shots.
And then on the power play, they just put the defense just put
skimmers.
The puck on that just along the ice. And they were deadly, and they were really good. And his son played on the team. And his son was a defenseman, and his son was okay. Like his son
was good.
He was a good player.
Good.
And I remember standing with a bunch of dads and stuff. And so they said, "Hey, what do you think of Coffey's kid?" And I said, "Ah, you know, he's pretty good. A good defensive kid." And the guy goes, "Yeah, well, he doesn't skate like his old man." I go, "Really? No kidding. Let's see. You have Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey as the greatest skaters in the National Hockey League. Yeah, no kidding. His kid doesn't skate like him."
Yeah, I'd say he was the closest I ever saw to Orr. Only difference between Paul Coffey, I think he played till he was 30 some years old. The difference between Paul Coffey and Bobby Orr skating is that Paul Coffey used to go to the outside. And he was so fast, he beat you to the outside. Whereas Bobby used to go into traffic. And that's when he used to get corked all the time. That's why he only lasted till he was 28. Bobby only lasted till he was 20. Imagine the greatest hockey player who ever lived only lasted till 28. And I said to Bobby, I said, "Bobby, why don't you play it safe? I said, go to the outside, you can beat him." He says, "No, that's the way I play." And he says, "I'm not going to change now." But he'd go into the traffic. He'd be like Pavel Bure, and Jeremy Roenick used to do the same thing. He used to, I call it leaving a leg. He just missed the guy, And the guy, and he'd have a leg going in.
Yeah, and then you remember what happened to him, Jeremy Roenick.
Oh, boy, did he.
I don't know, who was it, Pekka?
Yeah, Pekka got him, I forget. Jeremy Roenick, he could get hurt. Yeah. And they all got hurt. Anybody that went into traffic got hurt. Pavel Bure was the same way. Pavel Bure used to play reckless. I call it reckless. You know who also I call it reckless too? As Connor McDavid plays reckless too. Yeah. I mean, I see him go by guys and everything. Oh, not great. And I grip my teeth. I said, Opie. Because remember the first time he got hurt, he cut to the outside. Remember that?
Yeah.
And the guy said, that guy did it on purpose. And everybody, give me heck of it. I said, guy saying he hurt a guy on purpose. And then Connor McDavid the next year said, the guy said to him, you try that again, I'm going to do it because I did it on purpose. Remember that?
Yeah. He said, I'll break your shoulder again.
I'll break your other shoulder. So then he tried it this year. You know, you can't cut in on the defenseman. Because the defenseman looks bad. I know I shouldn't say that about Connor McDavid, but that's he plays reckless, well, just like Bobby. That's why he's the greatest. That's why he's the best hockey player in the world today.
Well, we were talking about hockey parents ruining guys' careers and stuff like that. But when we went to watch Connor McDavid, you never knew who his dad was.
No, you never knew his dad.
You know, like, and you know, he was the big, like, you knew he was going
star.
To be a first and all that. And
except he did one thing with the fathers do, but I didn't know his father because his father never interfered.
No, his father never interfered. You never knew who his mom was, and so you look and you know he didn't act crazy or bang on the glass or anything. But the one thing you and I do laugh at,
yeah, and we're the only we notice it. I guess
we can notice it is that all the fathers
who score,
like all the forwards and the defense fathers, they all go on to the side of the rink where they watch your kids score, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when the period ends, they all migrate. So it's like a migration of the two team's fathers.
And I went like this to you. I the first time we noticed it, I went like this to him, and I said, they're changing to go down and look at the
well, with
scored.
The goalies, I find fathers are different, but the mothers, if your kid's not starting, they'll sit with the other moms.
Yeah.
But if your kid's starting, very rarely do you see the mother sit with the other mothers. They're away.
Well, you know why? And I told you why. And I remember after a game one time, I never enjoyed a game when Dell was playing. And never. I was just glad it was over all the time. And I remember one father, he was a nice guy. So I think Dell would like that goal back, that third goal. What? What'd you say? He said, and now he knew he made a mistake. You think it was his fault? Anyhow, I never enjoyed
a game. You and I always stood by ourselves.
Oh,
very few people came up to us in between periods to sign autographs. But during when Dell was in net, nobody came up to us and gave us their opinion.
Never enjoyed a game when you parents out there, you know what I'm talking about. If your son or your daughter is playing goal.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I know we're talking about parents that act badly, but
they're all good. The
vast majority of parents are really good. And it's amazing when you bring somebody to a game. When we went to a couple of minor midget games, which I think they call them now under...
Yeah, you're not allowed to say midget anymore,
Under 16.
Whatever.
They can't believe how quiet it is.
Well, you know, house league, sometimes they yell on that, but in minor midget... you very rarely, and if somebody hollers, the people kind of look
AAA,
at them.
Well, in AAA, I go to the game sometimes. I don't even know who scores. You would never know. There's hardly ever any clapping. It's just amazing. It's all understated.
And yeah, and you read in the paper, they're the worst people in the world. And the best people in the world are hockey. Because let's face it, hockey is an expensive sport.
Yeah, that's the biggest.
That's the knock toward it is that it's expensive.
Well,
soccer people call it elitist and all that.
No, they're not. They're hardworking people, and they don't take vacations. Their car is always, you know, they got to go to tournaments. They have to, you know, the whole drive, and they're just hardworking people, and they spend the money. And this nonsense I hear. Oh, well, parents said, you see these parents, they want them to make the National Hockey League. Well, what's the matter with that? Why not want your kid to be the best? And I've never understood that one. Tim, you were telling me a story that I About the kid that scored the three goals. Remember? And I don't remember that, but you were telling me about it.
Yeah, you were. We were at a game, and we'll just get back to the parents sometimes that aren't nice. You were, some kid got a hat trick, and I think we were at Westwood Arena in Toronto, and you walked out, and we knew who the dad was, and the kid was kind of like, you know, he wasn't a superstar, and you'd said, oh, you know, congratulations on getting a hat trick, and the father goes, yeah, well, he should have had four.
Whoa.
So you took two steps, and you went back, and you kind of gave the guy hell.
You know, the thing is, if it's the right kid and he wants to play hockey, praise is the greatest thing in the world. You know, to knock him all the time, you know, yeah, you should have done this, you should have done that. You can do that later. But after a game, you got to be very, very careful. And you were talking about a kid that was sick on the bench.
Well, you know, like my wife Ling and I, we go to the games, and she's kind of new to hockey, right? And she was watching it. And we were watching it was a Toronto Marley game. Something happened that the Marleys were really shorthanded. I don't know if there was suspensions or what, but they had barely two lines. And this kid came off the bench, and he took his helmet off, and he got sick into the garbage can and put the helmet back on and hopped right back on. Like, it was like the whole thing took about 15 seconds. And, you know, and Link, like, she says, well, you know, that's really teaching that kid something. You know what I mean? Like, that's, a lot of people would think that's terrible. As you say, the Karens out there in the world would think that
young child,
that's terrible. But, you know, that's teaching that kid something that, okay, I'm not feeling good, but I got to go back out. And I really believe the most important thing that hockey teaches kids, and sports maybe in general teaches kids, is it teaches them disappointment. It teaches them to lose.
It teaches them how to cope.
Right. That, you know, maybe you should have won the game, but the goalie stole it, and you're out of the playoffs, and you should have won, or you got a penalty to cost the game for your team, but it wasn't a penalty. The ref blew the call, and you got to deal with it. And in today's society, kids just do not deal with failure.
They don't. Just let me tell you one story about Dell. And, you know, he was playing goal, and he was upset, and he got in the car, and he was upset. So I said, okay, Dell, you got 5 minutes to get upset. After that, get over it. And all this. So I was talking to another mom, hockey mom, and she goes, oh, when little Jeffrey gets upset, he's so upset, he smashes his goalie mask, and the other, oh, he thought he broke it, and he smashes this, and he smashes that. And I said, and she thought that was great. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, no, your child has to learn how to have coping skills. You lost the game, you feel bad, now get over it. You know what I mean? And I just couldn't believe it. So Tim, that is so true. You have to learn. It's not, what do you say, Dad? There's a big difference between being a good sport and a good loser, right?
Yeah.
Big difference.
Well, and that's what they're trying to do in sports now, is don't keep score.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everybody gets
a medal for participation.
Everybody gets participation. And nobody's better than anybody else and all that. And the whole thing that you want your kid into soccer or hockey or baseball or football or whatever.
Lacrosse.
Is to learn and cope with that stuff.
Right.
You have parents that are trying to take that out.
Oh, do you ever?
You know what I mean? And you go, then the whole concept of, it's not, but you know, it's, you know, the whole thing. And like they say, oh, you know, it teaches you teammates and teamwork and all that. But it teaches you how to be disappointed.
But let me tell you, Tim, when the parents start complaining in even double A and minor and just regular A, and they say, well, you know what, my kid didn't get enough ice time. I say, listen, when you're playing A, double A, and triple A, the goal is to win. If you want to have equal ice time, you play in house league. And that's what I used to tell the parents. Is that correct? Don't you think?
Yeah, I do kind of struggle with that. I mean, you know, it is a development league, and I think one of the problems that they have in minor hockey is some of these coaches get big dough to coach these
a lot
kids.
Of people don't realize that.
They get big money to coach.
Well,
these.
What about the guy that brings the guys over from Russia? That in the GTHL, everybody wants to play in the GTHL, but you have to have an address in Toronto.
Yeah, that's a real touchy subject.
And the guy gets I heard that the guy gets $5,000 for bringing the guys over.
Yeah, but like with the kids, like with the coaches, you know, if you're paying a guy, again, like big dough, if you're paying a guy, and I heard sometimes as high as 30 or 40 grand, they have to win.
Right.
But my thing is, you know what? It's a bit of a development league, right? So, you know, and then, but there, we should talk about that. I mean, that's a whole subject of.
Yeah, well, someday we'll get into that. We don't have enough time.
Because it's a whole thing. Should minor coaches be paid? And there's a yes. There's a good
argument for
yes, and then there's a good argument for no. But we'll get into that. But again, most parents are good.
Oh, they're the greatest parents in the world. They sacrifice. They bad coffee in the morning at 5 o'clock. Go to those machines. And they pay all that money. They don't take any vacation, especially if they got three or four kids. They go from one arena to the other. I'll tell you, but you know how Gretzky, dad, when he had an old station wagon. I remember him telling me he had an old station wagon. He used to take Wayne, pick up Wayne, leave his skates on, and drive him to another game. And so you have to have dedicated, and they are dedicated, and they're the greatest parents in the world. Hockey parents are the greatest. When I meet them and I see them and I know what they've gone through and I know what they're going through, I think they're the greatest people in the world.